Blog Talk Radio.
The Rebecca Roth Show, where the light shines out of the darkness onto the elephant in the room.
I think Blog Talk was testing us, our sanity levels, and I'm not sure we passed. For those of you who don't know, the way this works is 15 minutes before the show starts, you're able to call into Blog Talk and get your studio set up, and everything's supposed to be hunky-dory, and usually that comes off without a hitch. But today, 15 minutes before the show started, everything was going haywire. We were getting stuff out of the computer, not out of the speakers. The microphones weren't working. It was just an absolute disaster. But I think we have it working. If there's any issues, contact Rebecca on Facebook, and we'll see if we can deal with them. But at any rate, we're back. This is going to be an hour show. We're somewhat back to normal, which is always nice. As you know, Rebecca has been ill for the past month, it seems like, but particularly in the last 2 weeks. And she's back.
Well, I am. Thank you. I thought I was waiting for Betty Davis to tell everyone. Okay.
Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Okay. Well, we just had some really wild technical difficulties. I still can't hear through my headsets, but looks like everything might be working. You can tell I still have a little bit of a cold, but it's not what it was. I'm on my road to recovery.
I think, to be honest, it wasn't a cold. I think you've got pneumonia.
Well,
you probably still do.
I definitely did. I was a sick girl for a little while, sick old lady, I guess I should say. But it's great to be back and back into writing. Unfortunately, this illness has kind of set me back for my deadline that I'd set myself. And some lovely person sent me an email that said, don't set such hard deadlines for yourself. You're too stressful what you're going through. And yes, I did have a really stressful holiday. And life has continued to be stressful. Thank you, truthers. I really appreciate it. And so does my family and all those other people you think I am and their families. It's really pretty crazy when you have a group of people that are trying to figure out where you are, who you are, and stuff all the time. So, but she said, please don't kill yourself writing this book. Don't give yourself such a strong, hard deadline. So we might be pushing into April for this next book. But
I think realistically April, but April was probably the deadline.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Well, I said March or April. I was kind of hoping I was pushing for the end of March, but and realistically, you know, some of the stuff that takes a lot of time, like the research, is already done. Now I just got to figure out, you know, all the ins and outs of laying it out there in a interesting novel so people can read it and not be threatened by what we uncovered. So anyway.
Well, today's show is going to be something we've wanted to do for a long time. We wanted to do questions and answers, things that have popped up. Questions that people have asked and that are common. Now that Rebecca's not doing a lot of radio shows and the like, some of the information that is out there or that she needs to get out there, really this is the only vehicle by which we can do that. And so these are the questions that people, you know, have asked.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to start and fire them off.
Okay.
And let Rebecca just kind of run with them, see where that goes. One of the things that I think people always wonder is, you know, you really have the reputation of being the premier researcher in 9/11 issues. And when you look at the body of work that has been done prior to you, it doesn't change much. It's pretty static. Nobody seems to be adding anything to it. It kind of reminds me of Sisyphus rolling the ball up the hill and then, you know, rolling it back down again. I mean, it just is what it is. People are satisfied with you know, anything that's out there.
I'd like to say crazy conspiracies, because a lot of them are.
Well, I mean, a lot of them are. But
we talked about that, how they create this weird story, and then they try to mold everything to fit into their nutty story.
You know, this is the body of knowledge, and it really wasn't until you came along that things started to really get rocking and rolling, and changes began to happen in what the body of evidence actually was, because nobody was willing to do the work. They were just willing to, you know, think about it and put some, you know, goofball theory together, or take things that had actually been established and dwell on those, or embellish them to a point where, you know, they were almost unrecognizable. But at any rate, one of the questions that comes out is, what is, in all the research that you've done, what is one of the most surprising things that you've discovered?
I think the biggest and most surprising thing that happened is the absolute total rejection and outright lies about me on a personal level from the supposed truth movement. As an airline professional, yes, I am the one person that has stepped forward. You don't need 2,500 of us. You don't need, and now everyone out there can see what happens when an airline professional steps forward. You get these YouTube researchers, super sleuths, trying to figure out what happened, or these retired professors that cannot be sober with what they're putting out there. Absolutely cannot. This is such nonsense. No planes operated, nobody died, and all of that stuff. That is the biggest surprise to me, the absolute horrible, horrible rejection and the outright lies put out by people that supposedly were in the truth movement. And then I think the next thing that I could say was the biggest surprise was the degree of the cover-up of so many aspects of 9/11 by so many government agencies that I once trusted with my life. I'm personally looking at the U.S. Air Force, the scrambling jets, those alert jets, so we used to call them Strategic Air Command, and the FAA, and the cover-up. And even Thomas Keene, who was the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, even Thomas Keene said that the FAA and the Pentagon were caught in so many, what he called, misstatements, in other words, lying to the 9/11 Commission, that they were considering probing a legal investigation into the FAA and to the United States Pentagon. And that shocked me when I discovered that. And of course, that had already happened. He wrote his book in 2006, and that's where they mentioned that. Now, I didn't really get into looking into this till 2008 or 9, somewhere in there. So,
well, it would have been nice if they had actually done the investigation of that. But I think the thing that brings, you know, out in my mind in your research and the things when you just mentioned the fact that, you know, the degree of cover up by so many different organizations, it's just how compartmentalized this whole thing was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like it was one big master plan that everybody knew what everybody else was doing. It was the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. They just had a particular job that they had to execute in a timely fashion, and they did it. Mm-hmm. And yet that made it very easy for them to cover up, you know, their little dog pile.
There's got to be a lot of people that know that their little compartment of dog pile, their little compartment was actually facilitating some aspect of this, and they are sitting scared to death to open their mouths. Like a lot of airline people, they just are in a position they can't lose their pension and all that. I don't have that to lose, so I was able to speak freely and really to honestly tell people what it was that I uncovered and discovered.
Well, do you think that these, you know, particular elements or particular aspects of 9/11, do you think they actually knew that they were part of something bigger, or they've discovered it after the fact, or what's your take on that?
I think that some of them discovered it, most of them, I'm going to say, discovered it after the fact, and they're looking at, oh, well, I did this, and I remember the day before or months before, and a lot of stuff's going to come out in my third book that people saw things, but it didn't make any sense until not only after 9/11, but after they read Methodical Illusion. And when they did, they were in a position, whether they were in the military or in air traffic control, that then they came forward to me and said, how can I help you? Because this is what I saw. This is what I saw for weeks, days, months prior to 9/11. And those people have come forward, and there's lots of them in lots of different walks of life that have been associated with special operations, air traffic control, military air traffic control, both in Europe and the United States, regular air traffic controllers that were centers, air traffic control centers, that came forward. And then because of that, their expertise, we were able to find things. But what happened, I think, for a lot of them is when they realized that the planes were taken over remotely by the process they were taken over and where they were taken to. And that allowed a shift. It's like the eyewitnesses that have come forward. They saw a plane they thought was crashing, but after they read Methodical Illusion, they knew where that plane was going. And Lord knows, they were right on the flight path, and that's why the plane... And so it all makes sense. And that's happened not with just eyewitnesses, but also people that have been able to help read radar and that sort of thing.
Well, there, up until really... you know, you released your book and started doing interviews on the radio and stuff, there was no repository to put that kind of information. I mean, even if somebody had had or participated in a small aspect of what amounted to 9/11, and they either saw something, knew something, or did something, there was no place to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you just can't call up Congress and say, hey, I got an issue.
That's
here.
For sure. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that a lot of the people that became big name a 9/11 truther type people, they haven't had these people come forward to them. Now, why? It's a good question. Maybe because of their theories, maybe because of the way they deliver their theories, maybe because of their aggressiveness and their hate that they deliver some of their stuff through. And people now can see how I was treated by the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth and several other people that they promote that have absolutely no airline experience whatsoever. And so what do? They attacked me on a personal level, claimed I was a CIA agent. Well, I'd love to play that song, but then we'd have to cut it out when it goes on to YouTube. Secret agent, man. So, I mean, it's just absolute nonsense.
Okay, now I know one of the things that you relied heavily upon, and you've mentioned this several times, is your airline experience and your career. And I think probably what raised the red flag when you got into actually doing research on 9/11, as opposed to just writing a novel, was that airline experience. The fact that you knew that people weren't following protocols, weren't doing what it was they were supposed to be doing. What besides that? In your research, did you use, I mean, kind of give us a background as to how you go about doing research. And I know you don't want to bore people to death, but
yes, I did make charts.
Give us an idea of what you used to do research.
Okay. The first thing I did was I discovered the first few YouTubes I looked at were total nonsense. And so I alleviated not using YouTubes because the people that were making these YouTubes had no idea what they were talking about. Second off, anybody that had no experience in the airline, air traffic control, pilots, flight attendants that weren't writing, I disregarded them. And I went to the FBI documents, FAA documents, United States Air Force documentation, and everything that was put in to the 9/11 commission hearings and through the Zachariah Moussaoui 20th hijacker trial. And there was a lot of government agency stuff. Now, just for instance, if you go to YouTube and you look up Betty Ong's phone call, it's been edited. Now, also, the FBI documents that were put in to various different places, there is an original. And that's the one I finally found where I found that she said he stood upstairs. That comment has been taken out of other FBI documents, maybe that were set up into the 9/11 Commission or to the Zachariah Massawi trial, or put on YouTube as her voice and her 4 minutes of tape recorded call. So you do have to pay attention. You have to read everything. I read every single FBI interview from everyone involved from the day of 9/11 on through to what they put in again then to the 9/11 Commission, and they were different, and then what they put in to the Zachariah Massawi trial, and they were different. For instance, Barbara Olson's phone calls that Ted Olson said they were from a cell phone and an air phone, and we found out then that American Airlines 757s did not have air phones anymore that were working as of January 2001. So we know Ted was lying, but they weren't even put in to the Zachariah Massawi trial. Barbara Olson was not mentioned. Her phone calls were not mentioned at all. Just like Building 7 wasn't even mentioned in the 9/11 hearings. That building didn't fall down as far as they're concerned. But so I just searched through using U.S. Air Force documents about what they found. One of the things I found really hairy and scary that was on the September 13th, in a document that the United States Air Force at a Hill Air Force Base in Utah, and that's where 84 Raids is, and they created a document, and it was one of a four-page document, and they referred to Flight 93, I believe it was, as a 747 over and over and over again in their documentation. This is now 2 days later. Surely they knew what kind of aircraft this was. But then it made me think, well, maybe this was part of one of the drills, because there were, you know, a half a dozen or more drills going on, ongoing, just ending. Some are just starting. Some were in the middle of. There were lots of military drills going on. So I'm thinking, well, maybe that's the case. But I just looked, and I kept researching, and I kept looking. If I found a document that had a title, then I would just keep looking for it more and more, because most everything is put out to the public now online. So,
well, let me just parenthetically add here is one of the blessings that you have as a human being that's particularly to you is that you have one of those steel trap memories. So if you read something in document A, it's going to register or not register to you when you read something in document B. Now, most people that, you know, would read through all this, they'd get befuddled, confused, or they'd have to take so many notes that, and then they can't find their notes. You have, and I think one of the reasons that you've been, you know, almost, and I hate to use the word chosen, but, you know, been able to bring forth all of this information in a coherent and a simple format is your ability to remember things. So having said that, I know you got some questions from people on Facebook. Why don't you ask one of those and
just
move forward with that.
Earlier before the show, I put out onto my Facebook group, and it's a private group. You have to be invited to be in it. So if you're a Facebook friend of mine, you can get in there just by asking. Somebody asked, did they really find undamaged passports that day? And yes, in fact, they found undamaged passports. However, those passports were not on the four aircraft that we're talking about. Those passports were, of course, all planted, because you'll remember what we saw happen to the Twin Towers. They caught on fire. They exploded. And that paper passports aren't going to survive through that. And isn't it coincidental? You know, I don't believe in coincidences anymore. But isn't it coincidental that the only paper passports they found belonged to Saudi Arabian or hijackers? And they only found two of them. But then later on, they found four. And I think they've actually created another story that they found six of them, all of which belonged to the hijackers. Nothing ever belonged to a regular passenger or a crew member until they then years later started lying about it, because I think they said they found C.C. Lyle stuff too. But anyway, so yes, they were all planted. They did not survive those crash sites because they weren't there. Those planes were not at the, they didn't go into the buildings.
Well, passport planting is just kind of a common thing that they do. I mean, it's what they did in France.
Well, we saw it. We see it all the time. It's a recurrent thing. It's a false flag indicator. They leave their paper passport, and it survives. The one paper passport in France survived on his body, a suicide bomb So he blew himself up, but his passport unscathed again, just like on 9/11. Somebody else asked me this, and this is a great question. Is there anything about 9/11 that you are not, me, I am not 100% sure about how it was done and how it was managed or orchestrated? And yes is the answer. yeah, there is. And actually, I have uncovered some things that are helping to answer that. But, you know, when I set out to do this, I set out to find out what happened to the passengers, the planes, and the crew members. That was my main drive, because that was my livelihood. I never really looked into how they took the buildings down, but I have uncovered some interesting things about that. And I'm not sure of the placement of those elements, but I've found some interesting things that yet no one else has. So yes, the answer is, when did the planes leave Westover? Where did they go, and what happened to the crew and passengers? And where are they now? Okay, so that's one guy's questions. So let me just say this. We have no way of knowing when the planes left Westover. Sometime probably in the night, but, you know, military planes had the go ahead to fly. So they would have been considered military. They would have obviously had to fly at night. They could have been repainted. Remember, Westover was on a lockdown, and the crews were locked out for 2 to 3 days. So they had hangars plenty big enough to maybe do a little, you know, scrubbing of the paint or something like that. Where did they go? That's anybody's guess, but you'll remember Dov Zakheim had his refurbishing 767 program run out of, I believe it was Eglin, is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. Eglin Air Force Base, I think that's where his was. That's in Florida, so I'm going to guess they probably went there. They could have gone anywhere, however.
Well, and they also might have found their way to Boneyards.
And that's possible, too. And what happened to the crew and passengers, as I wrote about in the books, it is anybody's guess, because I wasn't there. Obviously, there are no eyewitnesses that are willing to talk. What we think happened collectively, when I say we, and this is all the flight attendants and pilots I've talked to, we think that some sort of lethal gas, much more lethal than the mace or pepper spray that most of the callers talked about, was put into the aircraft after the phone call callers were removed. And you remember, for the first three planes, there were two people taken off each aircraft. They were taken probably to an office in the hangar where they made phone calls. That's why they were able to make such clear phone calls for a half an hour, because they obviously weren't coming off of cell phones. And where are they now? Well, that's a good question, too. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just nodding because I know you know something.
I can't say it. I just... I'm going to make them wait for the third book. Yes, I do have an answer for some of that. So
some of it, not
some of
all
it.
Of it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, by and large, the passengers, the run-of-the-mill passengers that had no involvement at all.
Most were taken out.
Were taken out. And, you know, where are they? And
A pretty good idea of that, too.
Well, do you want to say?
No, I'm going to leave it for the book.
Okay.
And so another question that I have is, does anyone know exactly what, if anything, flew into the World Trade Center towers? There were lots of eyewitnesses for the first tower, the North Tower that was hit, that claimed it was missiles. Now, they were people that called to the police, and that's what they said. They thought they were missiles launched from the area of the Woolworth building. Now, I don't know, but one thing I do know is the 767 that we were told was United 175 was not United 175, because remember, I have an eyewitness to United 175 exactly where I had followed it to on radar. And she was in Western Massachusetts, and in fact, it was landing just prior to the phone calls being started out of the supposed United 175. So we know that wasn't the aircraft. There was some sort of pod or structure, and it may have been part of a remote control system. It may have been, again, the eyewitnesses said it was not a commercial plane going into the South Tower, that it was all gray or black or dark and no windows and no logo. And so, again, the eyewitnesses that were initially interviewed and never interviewed again, and it was really hard to find those interviews because they were kind of hidden by the media. And of course, the government. Another question was on the mural that was painted on the urban moving van truck. Well, that was reported by the New York Police Department. They found a truck, and the mural was a picture of the two Twin Towers with an American Airlines jet flying at it, not quite into it, but at it. And they suspected it had explosives in it, et cetera, et cetera. But that is actually, I believe you can find it on YouTube, the New York police describing these trucks or muraled vans that were placed around the complex of the World Trade Center. And there's another thing that a lot of people have suspected is that the United States Postal Service trucks that were all around the area of the towers, not just underneath the towers, but all around on those streets, Liberty Street, Water Street, all those streets that were later on you saw were blown apart, that those were actually car bombs to add to the confusion. I don't know if that's true or not. It's not something I've researched. Somebody asked, what about the people that received prior notice to not fly on 9/11? And the question was about a mayor of Los Angeles, but I recall it was the mayor of San Francisco, or he could have been the ex-mayor of San Francisco at that time, but I think he was actually the acting mayor, Willie Brown. And he, I think, if I recall, was contacted by Condoleezza Rice. Remember, she never thought that planes could be used as weapons of mass destruction, or who would have ever thought? But we know for a fact that she thought that because her and George W. Bush had talked about it just in August 6th in a presidential briefing. So she, I think, is who called and told him not to fly. So yes, in fact, people did know. And there were quite a few people from the Pentagon and the State Department that were given notice not to fly as well. Another question, who got the gold and how did they get away with it? And you're going to find that out in the third book. Now, this is another interesting thing that's covered through people that have come to me since the first book came out. And then also since the second book came out. So you're going to find this is really interesting and nobody's ever had a clue on any of the gold stuff. So, and how it got away. And then the next question, the last question somebody asked on Facebook group is, the pilots from a 777, this guy knows a pilot, and he asked the pilot about the flight termination system. The pilot pretended or acted like he didn't know about it. Is it possible that pilots don't know? Well, first off, the flight termination system was sold to the airlines in the early 90s. And in 2006, Boeing came out with a patent for their own, I believe they call it the Boeing Uninterruptible Autopilot System or something like that. It's uninterruptible. It is actually a remote control device, much like the flight termination system was. So if you're a new pilot, relatively new, if you were flying in 1990, 92, somewhere in there, when the airlines were offered this by Boeing through the SPC Corporation, the flight termination system, an anti-hijacking remote control system that would be used in the event of a hijacking, the hijacker took over the cockpit, they could remotely land the aircraft. I know that sounds a lot like 9/11 because that's how they did it. But so if a pilot right now doesn't know, especially if he's flying the 777, he probably doesn't know about the flight termination system so much, unless he flew drones in the military and has some knowledge about the drones.
Well,
but the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot system is now what is used for the remote control system on the Boeing aircraft. And now I know you're thinking, what about MH370? Yes, indeed. What about MH370?
Well, my guess is that pilots who spend a lot of time in the simulators, and I've actually had an opportunity to be in a Boeing 737 simulator. And now that I know what I know, I probably should contact that instructor and ask some questions about the flight termination system. But I suspect that pilots don't actually practice dealing with the flight termination system.
No, because once it takes over, they can't do anything. They can't talk on the radio. They can't adjust the aircraft. It is completely out of their hands. They can't even talk.
And that's for their safety.
Well, yeah, that's what it was designed for. It was designed in the event of a hijacking, and a hijacker had control of the aircraft inside the cockpit, which is what we were led to believe happened on 9/11. Well, both United and American had the flight termination system installed. I worked for an airline that did not have it installed. And these people that are out there crazy, there's some lunatic pilot that thinks that the Boeing uninterruptible flight system, autopilot system, was on at the time of 9/11. No, that patent, and you can find it online, it came out, and I believe the year was 2006. And by 2008, I believe that President George W. Bush made it mandatory that every commercial aircraft in the United States run by United States companies has been equipped with a remote control device. It is either the flight termination system, or that has been more than likely replaced now by the Boeing uninterruptible system that they have. And it's a remote control system. Eventually, now I've talked to air traffic controllers, eventually that system into the next generation will be able, the aircraft will be able to be landed by trained air traffic controllers when there's a hijack take place.
Well, that's all satellite. Interesting. Well, I've got some other questions okay. that I wanted to ask you about. You know, various, and you've kind of touched on this as you've answered some of the other questions. But, you know, people have contacted you since the first novel. I mean, I know personally that hundreds have. What type of information have you received from them? Has it been valuable? Has it been helpful? And do you get a lot of people that contact you with crazy stuff?
Yes and yes. Yeah, all the eyewitnesses. And this came from being on Coast to Coast AM and Hangman Report. Eyewitnesses that saw the planes, but they didn't know what they were looking at. They thought these planes were crashing, and these were people that were in Western Massachusetts, just outside of Westover.
Now, just to clarify, you've had more than one.
Yes. Uh-huh. And also people that were based there that told me that they were the base had been locked, evacuated, and they were locked out after their reserve base, logistics C-5 transport base reserve unit. That they were locked out and put up. Once they were activated that morning, they were put up in hotels in the Chicopee Springfield area. And for 2 to 3 days, she couldn't remember for sure how long, but they thought it was odd. And she absolutely was freaked out when she heard an interview, I believe it was on Hagman Report, that they used Westover for various things that had happened during her time there and her career, and all of a sudden it all came together for why she was treated the way she was. Some really interesting information about some boneyards. We talked about boneyards earlier, and some things that people saw and actually photographed, and it's not the boneyard that Philip Marshall was looking at. Let's see. I got lots of information about the stolen gold from the tower. And things that people saw weeks and months, months and months and months prior to 9/11. They didn't know what they were looking at when they were looking at it. But after they read Methodical Deception and Methodical Illusion, they went, uh-oh, I know what I was looking at now. And so they've come forward, too.
Could you just touch on, too, about pilots and flight attendants that have contacted you and what their attitude has been? I mean...
Oh, sure. I have been contacted by hundreds of pilots now and flight attendants, and it's kind of fun having been there and done that, that I remember seeing best-selling books of, you know, when people would finish, they'd leave them in their seats, and, you know, we'd be picking them up all the time and sharing them because we would read them too. I was contacted by someone from American Airlines that Methodical Illusion and Methodical Deception are going like wildfire behind a galley curtain. Apparently, the corporations aren't real happy about the flight attendants reading my books. I guess that means management knows about what's in my books, or they've heard interviews or what have you, and that they are going through the airline industry like wildfire. Now, some of my best supporters have been pilots, retired pilots, and obviously now, we told you last time that Methodical Illusion in the softback, paperback form is now in the second edition. And in that second edition is a new foreword written by a United 7576 captain who actually heard me on a radio interview and bought the books. And those guys have been buying the books by the cases, the pilots from United and American especially. But I've gotten tons of support from airline people. I have from all around the world. That's what's really interesting. You know, I've said this before, that airlines are like, we're like a big, huge family. So if something happened at United or American, you didn't fly for them, it still affected you. It affected you like they were, all the crew members were your best friends and coworkers. I mean, 9/11 was as hard on someone that worked for Delta as it was as someone who worked for United. Trust me. And I've talked about that before. And yes, well, the only way I would know that is if I had an airline career, because I couldn't make that stuff up. So somebody tell Jim Fetzer that. But anyway, to finish answering the other question, is that some of the people that have come forward to really, really help with that terabyte of Freedom of Information Act data. Now, that researcher that had done all the Freedom of Information Act requests wishes to be left unnamed. So he is unnamed. I'm not even going to tell you what state he's in because he's a recluse. But he had worked unpaid for architects and engineers for 9/11, unofficially and not paid, and had gathered up nearly a terabyte of Freedom of Information Act data. Now, when we started talking, he and I, because I'd done a conference call with Richard Gage and Architects for Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That's not what they're about, really. And he started sending me these files over Skype. And I said, well, how many of these files do you have? Because they were big, huge files, and we could transfer these files on Skype. And he told me that he had almost a terabyte. And I said, well, how do I get this? How do I get this? I'd like to have them all. He said, are you serious? You would? He had for 4 or 5 years done Freedom of Information Act withdrawals from the government, not knowing for sure what he was looking at or for. And he could not get one 9/11 researcher, not one, in the United States of America or anywhere else, not one, in 14 years, to give him an external hard drive to upload this information, that was willing to do the work to look at what he had, what he had discovered from the Freedom of Information Act data. Now, here's an interesting thing. The special operations military air traffic controllers and air traffic controllers that have joined me in looking at all of this stuff, that have helped me to understand aircraft location, aircraft speed, radar, XY coordinates, all of the information that's in the Freedom of Information Act data. Here's the thing they say to me. I cannot believe that the United States government released this to you. One guy asked me, he had a military background and an intelligence background, do they know you have this information? Because your life is in danger. Do they know, the government? And I said, well, I didn't do the Freedom of Information Act withdrawals. I just got it from the guy who did them. Well, that might be helpful, he said. But I cannot believe they released this kind of information. And I said, you know, after many hours of conversation and sharing files and going over what we discovered, I don't think the United States government, or any 9/11 truthers, actually, or even the researcher that gave me this tip, I don't think anyone ever dreamed that a flight attendant and pilots and air traffic controllers, military special operations units, guys from DARPA and intelligence would ever get together on a conference call and share the files that I have. I don't think anyone ever thought that there was a chance in hell that anyone would ever put that group of people together. And you know, there's only one guy who could do that. He has a three-letter name, and it starts with a G. And remember, when I sent the external hard drive to the researcher who wishes to be unnamed, I said, when you finish uploading this information for me, I'll pay your postage, and I have the screenshot, and I'm going to put it on one of my web pages, maybe all three of them, because I have had 9/11 truthers and Jim Fetzer claim that this is a lie. The postage was $9.11, and the researcher, who was an atheist, couldn't believe what he was seeing. When he did his stamps.com or whatever to find out what was the postage to send me back this loaded external hard drive of nearly a terabyte of Freedom of Information Act data, $9.11. And when I saw that, I knew that that one guy who could put all this together did it, and he was going to do more. And he did. He did. And so that's where we're at. So you can sit there and not believe it if you want, because I quite frankly don't care if you don't believe it. But I'm going to put that in there. Listen, it was so incredible that the researcher sent me a screenshot because he was so flabbergasted as an atheist. And I was telling him all along, God wants the truth about 9/11 to come out. And I know that for a fact because of things that have happened to me. And so I had told him that. Being an atheist, he didn't believe me. But when that postage came out as $9.11, he was almost a believer.
Now, in all of your research, and I'm sure you've got a lot of stuff that maybe you don't even know where to put, how much stuff is still out there? And what's your gut feeling? Do you think it'll ever really all come out?
There's lots out there. There's a lot that was hidden in the terabyte of stuff that we were talking about. Most of the research has been done for the third book, unless I get more eyewitnesses that are, documents, but people that saw stuff come forward or with personal experiences that were either in the towers or the buildings around it or eyewitnesses to the aircraft landing. But yeah, there's lots of it. I do believe that so many people right now are awake to the fact that 9/11 changed everything. Don't forget, 9/11 brought immediately to our country the Patriot Act, which completely dissolves the Constitution. And then after that came the NDAA. And again, you have no Constitution. Once they claim that you are arrested under the Patriot Act or under the NDAA, you don't get to go to court. You don't get all of that frills. You can be detained for indefinitely without anything that you think you have as an American citizen, any rights to a trial or speedy trial or any trial. So you see, 9/11 did change everything. And it's really important. I think about the old Pink Floyd song, Another Brick in the Wall. And after Kennedy and all these things happened, it's just been chunk, chunk, chunk on our freedom. And so to me, 9/11, there's a lot of people that are waking up to the new world order, to the tyranny that's kind of hanging out there. And people can start to feel it and smell it and sense that it's there. As they feel their rights are being impinged upon by things like the Patriot Act and the NDAA. So I think that after the Kennedy assassination, that which a lot of us now that are exposing 9/11, we were like in grade school or junior high school when the Kennedy assassination happened. So we grew up hearing things like the military industrial complex. We didn't know what that was, but we knew it killed Kennedy, didn't we? I mean, I remember hearing that as just a young child thinking, what is that? Well, I discovered what that is when I found out about 9/11 and I started researching all of who's benefited, who owns those companies that have benefited from the wars, the Project for New American Century, who planned the wars. So I think that there are people that really are patriotic Americans that know stuff, and that's who's coming forward to share.
So you think if you can really ever get the thing to open up, maybe on a national basis, that then the floodgates will come? And
yeah, I've been really encouraged lately because I've been seeing things. I'm not sure if they're true or not because, on Facebook you see a lot of headline-y stuff, but you don't know. And I've been sick and I've been trying to, right. So I don't know if this is true, but I'm seeing that Donald Trump might be interested in opening a new investigation. Now, in my first book, Methodical Illusion, you remember it started out with the Secretary of State and the President, all these people being removed from office because of the Syrian arms deals going through Benghazi. People ask me, how'd you know that was going to happen? I didn't.
I don't know that I did, but someone knew because it was written through my fingers. But people are looking now, and remember President Joel Sherman. What's he doing? He wants a new investigation. So when I see these headlines, even though they may be through a blog and they may be someone's wishful thinking, I sent Donald Trump a hardback copy of Methodical Illusion along with a letter that said, hundreds of my fans have asked me to please make sure that you at least read the last chapter, which is the State of the Union address from Joel Sherman, President of the United States. And if that's all you have time for, but I hope you can read the whole book, because Methodical Illusion wakes people up to what really happened and how it happened through the eyes of a senior flight attendant and a retired airline pilot. And also, I did mention to Donald Trump, make certain that there is no flight termination system or any other remote control system attached to your Boeing 757 like it was on 9/11. So if you are listening to this and you would like to see if we can't get someone interested in opening a new investigation, I guess the best thing we can do is send books to Donald Trump. So if you would like to do that, just let me know on Facebook or send me an email, and I'll send you a free book. And you can just send me back your receipt of the postage, and we'll send you an address for him. And if he gets a dozen or more of these, or 100 or 600, maybe he'll at least read that last chapter. And maybe he'll start to see that we've been hoodwinked in this country.
Well, and if he doesn't read it, maybe some of these people read it, will read it and tell him about it, because that's usually how things go in a hectic campaign. So let me just repeat that. If you will send Rebecca a message on Facebook or email, either one, and say, I'd like to send a copy of Methodical Illusion to Donald Trump, we'll have the publisher send you a free copy, which you can then highlight or underline, and you can put whatever note is.
Sticky note.
You want, just whatever you want to do. It's yours to send to him. And, you know, who knows if that's going to help, but at least it is in the pathway of somebody who acts like they want to deal with it. As I have mentioned before on this radio show, Donald Trump is not my favorite person. However, there are some things about him I like. And one of the things is that he has a way of dealing with things that have a tendency to get closed down, like Kennedy investigations, 9/11 investigation, things that really matter. He just kind of bowls right through them. And so if this is something that is of interest to you, we will send as many books as necessary to have you send them to him. And we have the address in which you can do that too. So that's a good opportunity. I hope you take advantage of it.
Yeah, that would be great. And that would be, I mean, really, to me right now, he is our only hope that's even going close toward the White House to ever get an investigation into 9/11. And one of the things that's been just amazing to me, and I'm humbled, I'm flattered, I'm ecstatic, that the people that heard me on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie after the first book came out in March, I believe it was, that I was on his show, they always questioned 9/11. They always knew in their gut nothing crashed at the Pentagon, always knew in their gut that nothing had crashed at Shanksville, and they always knew in their gut that the government was lying and the media was lying. And when they read Methodical Illusion, man, they have figured it out. And you know, when the eyewitnesses came forward, I remember the first gal that came forward, when she told me, I just started bawling. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Because it was real, and it wasn't just a theory, and it made myself cry. It was so real, and it was so real for her, and she was so grateful that she had thought that she was crazy. When she saw that plane landing or crashing, she thought it was crashing.
Well, she'd been told she was crazy for
14 years. And so she was so grateful that she felt sane again. And I was like, I was so grateful that she actually saw with her own two eyes. And I've had more people come forward from Western Massachusetts that are very familiar with the Air Force Base and aircraft. And so they were not dummies. They know exactly what they were looking at. She actually could see people in the window on United 175. That's how close the plane was. And she was so convinced that it was going to crash and that she was the last person to see it. And whoever was looking out the window might have seen her. And it was one of the last things that that person would have seen before they maybe died in the crash. So it was really amazing for me because, like I said, when I first discovered Westover and the remote control systems and through all of the details of the phone calls and all that, I just could not believe it. I was in denial myself, and I tried for about a month to discredit myself, to debunk what I'd found. I did not want this to be true. Absolutely. I was sick to my stomach. When I discovered this, I was like, no, absolutely. But the phone calls had to have been made on the ground. And the fact that the flight attendants from Flight 11 were telling two different stories. They were sitting in two different locations and they were both telling two different stories about where each other were and what was going on. And they didn't tell the most important detail. The most important detail for any flight attendant on 9/11 is how, H-O-W, how did a hijacker get inside the cockpit? That's the only important information. And not one of them came out and said it. But afterwards, the media said, oh, they told us all the important things. No, they didn't. They called their parents. They called their spouses. They said goodbye to their children. That's not FAA protocol. When I really got into looking at this, I thought, this is absolute insanity. This is just emotion-grabbing stuff. Who was there? And when I looked and I found actually a Hollywood producer was sitting across the aisle from Mohammed Atta on Flight 11, I was like, okay, that's enough. Enough of this. I could not believe it. And he'd actually done Wings, a show about airplanes and airline people. I mean, what are the chances? You know, you get to a point when you get into this and you find all this stuff, they just can't believe in any coincidences anymore. You know, so that kind of carries over for me in everything I look at. You know, we talked about San Bernardino and what was going on there. And now out of San Bernardino, and wasn't that in like December or November? It was quite a ways back. Now what's come out of San Bernardino? The Apple computer is being forced by the FBI.
The iPhone.
To get a backdoor put in to the iPhone so that the FBI can be in your phone. Hello? This is why. Now, what if they were using Samsung? What if one had a Samsung and one had an HTC or they just so happen to have iPhones, which is the most popular phone that you and I have, right? I don't, but you probably do. So what now? They get away with this with iPhone and then Samsung's down the tube and then HTC and then the Android and all those phones are going to have a back door in them. They probably already do, actually, because one of the things I found in all the research I did is most of the people that were involved in 9/11 are now involved in artificial intelligence and internet security and the cloud. If you put anything on the cloud, you're putting it in Israel. Okay? Just got to know that. If you have anything in the cloud, you'd be wise to get it out. Put it in a flash drive. Buy yourself a 2 terabyte external hard drive and load it into that. If you have anything that you care about. And really, people need to start being smarter than their phones, because these people who absolutely planned and perpetrated and did 9/11 are all now involved with telephones. They were then too. Communication systems, internet system, internet security. One of them was very much attached to a company that then Symtax or whatever the name of that does your antivirus thing. Symantec. They sold out to Symantec, one of their companies. These people, if you look and see who they are, you can see where they're connected and what they're connected to. And the future is artificial intelligence. And if you've never heard that gal DJ from, I think her YouTube's called something Live 9 News or something. She was on with John B. Wells, and she's talking about the quantum computers, D-wave computers, and artificial intelligence. It's, of course, in the methodical deception. So one of the things I just want to close the show with is earlier today I got an email from someone that thought I was a CIA agent. So I want to square this away with all of you who believe in an old retired lunatic professor that claims I was involved with the CIA. Obviously, you and he have not read either book. But let me just tell you this. I started flying in 1973, and I quit flying in 2004. I was 53 years old and a single mother. Now, I had been injured in several airplane incidences, severe turbulence. I had back problems. I had been in the hospital. I had some health issues. And at 53 and a 31-year career as a flight attendant, I'm pretty sure the CIA could have found a 30-something that didn't have a bad back and all of my health issues to hire to be a secret agent, don't you think? I mean, really, don't you think? As a single mother, had they come to me with my bad back and bad health, I would have said, go to hell. No, I'm staying with my kids. So after I retired, yes, in fact, I did work for a living, and I supported myself and my children. But I was never a CIA agent. And if you honestly can sit and think that the CIA, who has the ability to walk into any college campus and get any A student or B student or any physicist or any chemistry specialist or any smart kid or any football player or any special operations soldier, that they would rather have a decrepit 53-year-old single mother with a bad back and bad health, you're crazy. You're crazier than the professor that's convinced you that I'm a CIA agent. So slap yourself because you're stupid.
That's, are you done?
Basically what I told him in the email. I mean, how stupid is this? But here's the thing that's really weird to me. Jim Fetzer, the biggest troll on the internet in the AE 9/11 truth movement, right? Jim Fetzer, who has tried to convince people that I'm a CIA agent, he's good friends with Susan Lindauer. And Susan Lindauer claims that she was a CIA asset. Of course, she was also put into a mental institute by the United States government under the Patriot Act, she claims. But it's okay for her. They're good friends. She's a CIA asset. Ray McGovern, he worked with the CIA. He's okay. He's everybody's friend. Philip Marshall, remember the pilot that wrote The Big Bamboozle, trained on the 757-767. He was also a CIA pilot along with Bobby Seale. He's okay. Everybody loves his books. Nobody's claiming he was a CIA agent because he was, and he told people that. He also then went to work for United Airlines. So isn't it odd that it's okay? Ted Gunderson, he was FBI. Sybil Edmonds. Everybody loves Sybil Edmonds. She was a FBI. Okay, so I was a flight attendant. I was not CIA. I'm not CIA now. I'm retired. I'm an author and a best-selling author, and I think that's a thorn in Jim Fetzer's butt. And not only his butt, but the butt of these wannabe radio people that can't get more than 100 people to listen to their show. Too bad. So sad. Go out and use the name Rebecca Roth. See if you can't get some audience. Huh? That's what they're doing. This is insanity. Absolute insanity. But that's why I never used YouTube or any of these internet super sleuths for documentation to find out what I found out about 9/11. Because they don't know what they're talking about. For example, Jim Fetzer has decided I have been at least 15 different identities, and they've all contacted me. Now, several of them have had their home addresses and phone numbers posted. Thanks, Jim. You're just a real smut butt jerk. Anyway, I think that's a good way to end this on my rant against the 9/11 truthers. Aren't they truthful? Yeah, aren't they truthful? They're all
well,
about truth.
Well, I mean, what can you say to that? I mean, that's just a good question and answer. We'll do this again sometime because the questions continue to come. And we'll go and see if we can roust Frank out of the bar and have him say goodbye.
Sounds
if I can find
good.
Him.
Frank, where are you?
Where are you?
Frankie, Frank, where are you? Oh, is he not here anymore?
Now there he is.
All right.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away.